We're continuing our discussion on pure devotional service, change in heart. We ended up last night just with a review of Canto 1 and then the first two chapters of Canto 2. This morning we discussed the first eight verses of Chapter 3. And for those of you, there's some persons that weren't with us this morning, so a few minute review. The process of Gyan and Yoga have been addressed in the first two chapters. Certainly the path of Yoga, because meditation upon the Lord in the heart is the primary function of the yoga system. After perfecting the earlier stages of yoga and taking help from one's intelligence, which is the essence of Gyan, recognizing ultimately that one is receiving intelligence from a higher source, ultimately from the same super soul that the yoga process focuses upon in meditation. So whether through the path of knowledge or through the path of meditation and yoga, fixing one's concentration upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the most effective means of yoga being Shadhavan Bhajate Yomam Same Yukta Uttama Mataha, the end of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita concludes, of all yogis, first Krishna says, whatever you do, be a yogi, and of all yogis, this is the best. Shadhavan Bhajate Yomam, that's the best. Be fixed in devotional service with great faith. So that's very nice and very clear. And it answers the two questions asked by Maharaj Parikshit earlier, preceding these two chapters. Now, in the third chapter, the address goes to, what if in the present circumstance one has other desires? How to manage those other desires, how to address them. And so the Vedic principle of, rather than, so it's, if it's something that you have that's by nature selfish, not spiritual, at least our Vedic wisdom teaches that one should try to satisfy some higher personality, minimally, the devatas, and by that, trying to satisfy the desire of a superior personality first, one's own desires will become satisfied and one's nature will become elevated to the quality of goodness, or more to the quality of goodness. So that was our discussion this morning. Verses 2 through 7 give a whole shopping list of this desire goes to that deva, that desire goes to another deva, and there's a lot of desires, and then there's a lot of devas. And then the conclusion of that long list is found in this evening's verse. So we'll be covering 8, 9, and 10 from chapter 3, Pure Devotional Service, Change of Heart. One should worship Lord Vishnu or his devotee for spiritual advancement of knowledge, as distinct from material advancement of knowledge, or in the language of Ishopanishad, the culture of avidya and the culture of vidya are distinct. So this is for the culture of vidya, spiritual knowledge. Not just for the sake of knowledge, for having something that you didn't have before. You have another commodity filling your pocket. I've got some spiritual knowledge over here. I got material knowledge over here. It's not just another commodity. It's a way of life, because spiritual knowledge has implications to it. It's the implication already includes the mode of goodness and beyond goodness into transcendence. And there's a life in transcendence. It's different than the life of in pursuit of material temporary things. Vidya Badhu Jivanam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described the process of Sankirtan as the life of all transcendental knowledge. So one should worship Lord Vishnu or his devotee for spiritual advancement of knowledge and for protection of heredity and advancement of a dynasty. One should worship the various demigods. So now the discussion is moving into a juxtaposition of different tendencies or modes of worship. The Upasana Kanda section of the Vedas addresses worship. Upasana deals with worship. So where does one repose the tendency for worship? And in short, the essence is, if you're tendency for worship is towards temporary and material things, your worship goes over here with the devas who can deliver temporary and material things. And if your aspiration is spiritual, your worship goes over here with Lord Vishnu. And the result of that will be spiritual knowledge. And the result of that will be a spiritual mode of life, and the result of that will be after chaktva deham punar janma naiti mamiti sorjana. One will not take birth again in this world, but will go to the spiritual planets. Yanti deva vrata devan. You worship the devas and you go to the planets of the devas. And in between going there is the attainment of material things. So if you, those of you that attended the morning discussion, our Acharya Jiva Goswami, he assesses there are different kinds of intelligence, as we talked about. There are different kinds of knowledge. There are different kinds of intelligence that can acquire that knowledge. And if we could close that door, that would help a little bit. Close the door, if you would, just to keep the sound out. There we go. Oh, there's people out there? Oh. There's a speaker. This keeps, you can hear better because of the kirtan. So we'll go back to, as a refresher, the morning discussion about intelligence. What does intelligence do? Western philosophy and Western theology doesn't have a clear understanding of the difference between mind and intelligence and the soul. It's kind of this blur. Just an example of that, many of you may have seen or read, seen on video or read in Science of Self-Realization, the conversation between Srila Prabhupada and the Cardinal of the Catholic Church, Cardinal Benelieu. You've seen or read? Okay, good. If you read that carefully or listen carefully, what the Cardinal is saying is, his understanding is the soul is the mind. He says, the difference between a human and an animal, that the human has rational faculty. The animal has no rational faculty. and therefore the animal has no soul. And therefore it's okay to take the life of an animal because they have no soul. It's not killing because they're not alive, because they don't have rational faculty. Prabhupada's reply is, where is it stated like that in your scripture? He doesn't answer the question. He just goes on with that assumption. There's no, so step back from the dialogue, there's no clear understanding of the difference between the mind and the soul. Another example, I gave this already while here, Descartes. Brilliant statement. I think, therefore I am. Right? You've heard that before? Je pense, donc je suis. I think, therefore I am. Brilliant. I know that I exist because I think. That must be me, the soul. That's high philosophy in the West. Vedic teaching makes a very clear distinction between the functions of the mind, the functions of the intelligence, and the function of the soul. The soul animates everything, and the others are material energies. The soul has free will. The soul can invest consciousness over here, or invest consciousness over there. When it goes over there, it becomes conditioned by the modes of nature. When it goes over here, it's under the care of the spiritual potency of Krishna. The intelligence function is a function of discrimination, in the positive sense, or discernment, to be able to tell one thing from the other thing. You know, this is a pencil, and the pencil's function is to write, and over here is a pair of cartels, and this is for playing music. And a child may come and it's just something to put in their mouth. Because everything goes into your mouth, right? But then, so, anamoya, jnanamoya, vijnanamoya, anandamoya, pranamoya in between. But those stages of evolving of consciousness, so the discriminating faculty of the intelligence evolves. But that's what the intelligence does. It discerns one thing from another thing. Spiritual intelligence begins with discerning matter from spirit. That's where Krishna begins his discussion with Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. Sankhya. Over here is matter, over there is spirit. This is the qualities of matter, this is the quality of spirit. He's giving spiritual intelligence by analyzing this from that, matter and spirit. Then comes the controller of both. That's yet another entity, Krishna, or Super Soul. So, there are persons that have discriminating capacity, but they don't act on it. We all fall in that category. We know what is called anishtita bhakti. We know what is good for us. We consider very carefully, we contemplate very carefully. It'll be very good for me if I do this. And we find it difficult to do this consistently. With careful discrimination and application of intelligence, I know it's very good for me if I don't do that. And lo and behold, some time passes and we're doing that which we know is not good for us to do. So intelligence is not enough. Intelligence is necessary, but not enough. So then, there are three words that are used in these first 10 verses of the third chapter. Manishinam comes in the first verse. We discussed that this morning. Thoughtful. I really should do this. and you stay with that, your intelligence stays with that thought. Your intelligence guides the mind, which then guides the senses. Or manishi is the phrase that's used in the seventh verse of this chapter. I'll just read to you how Kalpa describes that. Because Maharishi Pariksit is about to die, there's 7 days remaining before he leaves, so he's very thoughtful. I can't fool around anymore. This is it. Like Jamila, he was fooling around for a long time. When the Yamadutas came, time was up. Ah, Narayan! And so the Yamadutas came, the Vishnu Dutas came, and they had this really intense Srimad Bhagavatam class. And what was at stake was his life. Whichever was the prevailing point of view would decide which direction the soul would go in. He was very attentive to that Bhagavatam class. And Maharaj Pariksit was very attentive to the message of Shukadeva Goswami. He didn't want to know just like armchair philosophy. Gee, what is somebody supposed to do when death notice comes? You hear a knock on the door. Death has come to your door. He was very thoughtful. Death is inevitable for everyone, intelligent or foolish. But Maharaj Pariksit had been addressed by Shukadeva Goswami as Manishi, the man of highly developed mind, because at the time of death, the demonstration of his Manishi is he didn't try to hold on to the temporary material things of life. He let go. Remember I mentioned yesterday evening, a theme of the first two chapters is detachment. Because this is all temporary. Detachment doesn't mean I don't care. Detachment means attachment to the Supreme. And when the notice comes, it's going to be taken away. You don't desperately cling to that temporary thing. But the thoughtful person takes shelter of the Supreme Lord. And life is a preparation for that moment. So one should cultivate now taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. So in that final moment, death has come. You're ready. Manishi. He relinquished his kingdom, turned his kingdom over to Janmadagni, his son, or Janamejaya, excuse me, his son. Gave up his royal crown, gave up his royal dress, took just simple dress of a mendicant, sat by the bank of the Ganges River and prepared to fix his consciousness upon the personality of Godhead. That doesn't happen just because you're a pious soul or you're a religious person or you've got, you know, this amazing capacity of suddenly at the time of death it all comes together and you fix your mind upon Krishna. What happens is those things that you're most attached to during the course of your life, that's where the mind goes. Whatever attachments you've cultivated in this life, that's where the mind goes. Little personal story. I was traveling once from Sankirtan, from book distribution. For years, all that I knew in Krishna consciousness was distributing Prabhupada's books. Morning till night, literally from 9 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, 7 days of the week, that's all I did. I came back for the Sunday feast. Excuse me, except for Sunday, came back, but 9 till 9. And one of the places that I went was the airport. JFK, distributing books at the airport. And many times I had to go alone because there's nobody else that wanted to go to the airport, and I found it a great place for distributing books. So one day I was coming back on the A train, subway, and when I reached a certain platform, I had to switch to go from the A train to the F train to get to the temple. And when I got off on the platform, there was somebody dying right on the platform. There was a crowd of people. It was at night, like 8:30 at night. And people were crowded around, and the guy's like writhing on the floor. And so somebody called out, "Charlie, what's your last wish?" "Can I have a cigarette?" "Get Charlie a cigarette, hurry up." Got a cigarette, gets puffing away. And, "Charlie, anything else that you want, your last wish?" "I want Susie." His wife or girlfriend or whatever it is. And with that, he left his body. Wanting a cigarette and Susie. No spiritual culture. And the follower of the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to develop spiritual culture, spiritual intelligence, discerning, taking shelter of spirit instead of taking shelter of matter, and a thoughtful person, not just a religious person, can also be very attached to material piety and the fruits of material piety in the form of wealth, dynasty, as mentioned in the verse. Concerned of fulfilling one's plans, for providing something for one's descendants, and so on. Now, how is that to be achieved, that spiritual shelter to be achieved? That's one of the questions that our Acharya Jiva Goswami asks. How can one get to that position that Maharaj Parikshit was in? And it's by the cultivation of the hearing process. Just like you go to, when you go to school, how can we calculate the number of hours that just the persons in this room have spent in a classroom, in school somewhere? I mean, so many hours. How much time and energy have we invested in cultivation of avidya? The purpose of it? So that you can have a proper occupation on the other side of your education, so that you can prepare for the adult stage of life. Isn't it? Now, what about after the adult stage of life? Like, you know, the inevitable death. Where's the time and energy we're spending to cultivate vidya? If we don't invest the time and energy, where's our consciousness going to be? In the temporary. Is it going to be something else? So there has to be investment, according to the teaching of the Bhagavatam, from the tender age of childhood. Komara, acharet, pragyo, dharmam, bhagavataniha, manushim, sudhurlabham. It's this human form of life is very rare to be achieved, and when one achieves it, use it properly. And those who are parents or will become parents, that's the responsibility of parenthood, is from the tender age of childhood to train the children, dependents, and in their growing years of life, how to cultivate spiritual intelligence. Vidyam cha vidyam cha yas, yasto veda vayam saha. The Ishopanishad indicates that one should have a proper understanding of these two things side by side. And doesn't just mean a healthy spoonful of avidya along with a spoonful of vidya. It means to understand the distinction between the two. Clearly. aspirations for material enjoyment by endeavoring persons are condemned by the Vedic process. Now, the Vedic process provides us with means of achieving, this is Karmakanda section of the Vedas, plentiful, vast portion of the Vedas explain how to fulfill desires through acts of sacrifice, through fruitive activity and proper conduct, whereby the things that the heart desires can be achieved in a virtuous way. But the indication that we have from the Vedas, and particularly we can refer to Bhagavad Gita, kamaistaistai hritagyana prapadyante anya devata, the taking shelter of anya devata, various devatas, is for those who have very strong kamaistaistai hritagyana. Prabhupada refers to this phrase, hritagyana. This is strong material desire in the heart. And the means of fulfilling those desires by taking shelter of a superior person, that's there. But the indication that Krishna gives is one should not aspire for those heavenly destinations. Abrahma bhuvana loka punar avartanorjana. Up to the highest, Brahmaloka, way far above Svargaloka, Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka, Ramaloka. All are places wherein repeated birth and death take place. And the Vedic wisdom is to teach us how to go beyond samsara, the cycle of birth and death. And the Bhagavatam is giving us very, very clear indication. Both are there. The option of vidya and avidya, of spiritual intelligence by which one can lead one's life still taking care of necessities but looking at the ultimate destination of the soul. And over here is not taking into consideration the ultimate destination of the soul, just taking into consideration elevation through the modes of nature, fulfilling desires in an elevated way and getting a material upgrade by ascending to the heavenly region, exhausting pious activities, and chine punye martya lokam vishanti, like the Ferris wheel, going up, 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 down, 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 up, 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 just like a child. And ride the Ferris wheel, lifetime after lifetime. And intelligent persons should thoughtful, intelligent, and the next phrase that's used is udhara dhi. Dhi indicates intelligence. Subuddhi, or just dhi, intelligence. And udhara dhi is broad intelligence. So this is the position of someone who takes shelter of Lord Vishnu, or the personality of Godhead, Krishna, is whatever my condition, sarvakama, akama, or mokshakama, udharadi. The broad-minded person, tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Very important verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Vedanta Chaitanya was referring to that this morning. It's text 10 of the third chapter. This is the prescription for the audience that Shukadeva Goswami was requested to address, people in general, and those who are about to die. Because when you're about to die, you really don't have a whole lot of time to study all the Vedas and reach all of its conclusions, or perfect the yoga system that takes 40,000 years, or perform all the Vedic rituals found within the karma. Your time is there. jara and mrityu are at your door, beckoning, and they don't stop. You can't say, excuse me, the door's locked and I lost the key. I wait till I find the key. Which way is the window? They have their master keys. They can just come in. What is one to do at that moment? So, whether one has, at that moment of death, as well as during life, because Maharaj Pariksit at least knew he had 7 days. We don't know for sure if we have 7 days. Can anyone say for sure they have 7 days, at least? Can't say that. It may be more. It may be 7 seconds. It may be less. At some point, it's less. Although we may not know. Notice may be given, as with Maharaj Pariksit, and it may not. Now, how should you live your life? That was Maharaj Pariksit's question of Shukadeva Goswami. So the answer is this answer. Akama sarvakamova mokshakama udharadi tivrena. Tivra indicates, from the purport, the rays of the sun that are full, not at dawn or at dusk when it's kind of refracted rays of the sun, nor when it's cloudy and the cloud cover blocks the rays of the sun, but the intense rays of the sun is where the word tivra is used. So as with tivra sun rays, tivra bhakti, very strong, powerful devotional service, tivra bhakti. And we will go through the language of the verse. Sarvakama, or shorter is sakama, having desires. Sarvakama, having all desires. We discussed in this morning's class that was the position of Dhruva Maharaj. There was Dhruva Maharaj, that was his desire, and there was the Supreme Lord. He knew he couldn't get his desire, the kingdom, that would be better than his father, Uttanapada, better than Uttanapada's father, Swayambhuva Manu, his kingdom is the universe. Uttanapada's kingdom was the earth. Swayambhuva Manu's kingdom was the universe. And Lord Brahma is the topmost being in the universe, the father of Swayambhuva Manu. He wanted a kingdom better than Lord Brahma's, which doesn't exist even within the universe. I want the universe. I want a kingdom. There was Dhruva and his desire and the Supreme Lord. So he was told by his mother, you can get the kingdom you want only through the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Okay, I want the Supreme Lord. But his motivation is mixed, to say the least. His motivation, he wasn't thinking, let me take shelter of the Supreme Lord before I want a kingdom came along. And I want a kingdom came as a result of wanting to get back at his stepmother for insulting him so viciously. So two strikes against him. Get back mentality, and I want a kingdom. But so that's sakama. But there was the Supreme Lord, and his pursuit of the Supreme Lord was with such tivra, with such intensity, he got on the other side of his material desire. It just dissipated. It was gone because of tivra bhakti. As if his bhakti was unmixed from the very beginning. And that's how Prabhupada explains this. Regardless of inner motive. So we're being taught something else. or not being instructed as Narada instructed Dhruva, or being instructed by Rupa Goswami and followers of Rupa Goswami, that from the very outset one should reduce or not act upon, ultimately eliminate material desire, and of two categories, speculative knowledge and sense gratification. Once Prabhupada was asked by a reporter, "Swamiji, how long does it take to become Krishna conscious?" Prabhupada's answer was, less than a moment. And then he said, in that less than a moment, two things must happen. One must give up sense gratification and give up the tendency of speculative knowledge. Generally, people are attached to these two things, and so generally the process is gradual. But in less than a moment, one can become Krishna conscious, as we find in the second canto, Katvanga Maharaj. When he asked, he received the benediction to have whatever desire he wanted fulfilled. It wasn't, "I want a kingdom. I want to become prime minister. I want to become the best cricket player out in the field," or whatever it is that people may have some desire for. His desire was to know how long until he would meet his death. And he was told that it would be less than a moment. And so he took full shelter of the personality of Godhead and returned to the spiritual world. So, in less than a moment, unless we're attached, and most of us are a little attached. So we're instructed by Rupa Goswami to become detached from sense gratification and mental speculation, and to cultivate, most important, how do you do that? Cultivate attachment to pleasing Krishna. Now what does that look like? A desire just to please Krishna. That's the akama stage. There's still desire, but the desire to please Krishna. Now again, this section of the Bhagavatam is very important, and therefore our acharyas have commented on it profusely, and specifically Jiva Goswami, one of my heroes in Krishna consciousness is Jiva Goswami. He and his Sandarbhas comments. He describes what akama is. So we've been through a little bit what sakama is. Here's akama. Bhajaniya parama purusha sukha matra sva sukhatvam. Sva sukhatvam. One's own happiness is the happiness of Krishna. Bhajaniya parama purusha sukha matra svasukhatvam. So there's matra sparshas tu kaunteya sukoshna sukha dukada. There's the object of the senses and the senses. And material happiness is bring your senses to those sense objects and buzz, oh, sense gratification. At least anticipating sense gratification. That's called material happiness. The result of it is duality. Sometimes it's happiness and sometimes it's stress, and it all depends on the state of mind. What conceptions you have of what happiness is. If it's a cold winter night and you feel a warm breeze, that's happiness. And if it's a hot summer day and there's the hot breeze, it's distress. Same breeze, just what your mindset is, or what the material duality says it is, and so on and so on. What is one man's food is another man's poison. According to the modes of nature, happiness for one person is another person's distress. What is night for the introspective sage is daytime for the materialist, and vice versa. So when matra, when the senses are find their happiness in the happiness of Krishna, we have senses. And if the senses are engaged, Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhaktir Uchite. Such a simple definition. Such a simple. The senses satisfying the master of the senses. My happiness is Krishna's happiness. That's called love, isn't it? My happiness is the love, is the happiness of the beloved. That's called love. That's a condition of love. Now, there's the material reflection of happiness. It's called the mode of goodness. Transcendence is totally selfless love. The reflection of selfless love is the mode of goodness, where my happiness is the conditioned sense of well-being, that I'm, by self-sacrifice, I'm arranging for the happiness of others. It goes like this. I am so fortunate, and others are less fortunate. Let me give some of my good fortune to the less fortunate, out of my largesse, out of my kindness. And one, according to Bhagavad Gita, one who is doing like that becomes conditioned by the modes of nature to a sense of happiness, a sense of contentment and well-being. And we all know what that happiness and the mode of goodness is. When you go out of your way to help another person, there's a sense of contentment that comes. Isn't it? We all know what that is. Material happiness in the mode of goodness is but a reflection of the akama position. The akama position is my happiness is in Krishna's happiness. And actually experiencing Krishna's happiness is the nature of my happiness. It's the happiness of the part unto the whole. Prabhupada's example is when you put food in the stomach, automatically the nourishment that goes to the stomach goes to all the parts of the body. Instead of trying to put food in the hand and food in the elbow and food in the other, all the parts of the body. Or put water on the leaf of the tree and water on the branch of the tree and water on the trunk of the tree and water on the fruit of the tree. Just put water on the root of the tree. And the water is distributed to all the parts of the tree. And the bhakti process is to put all of our tendency for service upon the root of all existence. What is that root of all existence? Whatever that is, that's the absolute truth. That from which everything else comes. That's Vedanta. Janma dyasya yataha. Take your tendency for service and repose it on the root of all existence. And automatically, the happiness of Krishna is distributed to all the part and parcel living entities. As the water is distributed to all the parts of the tree or plant, the watering the root. The Vedic process is to find the root of existence and place all intelligence, place all service propensity, place all of your energy there. That's the akama position. So Prabhupada writes, I'll read it. It's just very nicely composed. This means that one should feel happy only by experiencing the happiness of the Supreme Lord. This intuition, he uses that word several times, intuition of a living being is sometimes manifested even during conditional stage in the material world, in the manner of altruism, philanthropy, socialism, communism, etc., by the undeveloped minds of less intelligent persons. This is not the udaradi. This is the very narrow and limited intelligence. Again, he writes, in the mundane field, such an outlook of good, doing good to others in the form of society, community, family, country, humanity, is a partial manifestation of the same original feeling. It's the reflection, partial manifestation or reflection of the same original feeling in which a pure living entity feels happiness by the happiness of the Supreme Lord. So this is spiritual intelligence, to discern one thing from another thing. The happiness of Krishna and experiencing the happiness of Krishna as one's own happiness. And then the reflection of that is the contentment that one feels in the mode of goodness. One becomes conditioned by the mode of goodness on a bodily conception of life. Let me do good for others. Here's a body that needs some food. I'll find some satisfaction in giving some food. Here's a body that is infirm. Let me create a hospital for this person, these persons that don't have medical care. Let me, etc., 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 etc. Social work, philanthropic work, altruistic work. And many persons, it's not to say it's wrong. It's just, if it's devoid of God consciousness, it keeps that person and oneself in the limited sphere. Those things need to be done. They need to be done because we have bodies, and bodies need to be cared for. It doesn't mean we should neglect them because it's not who we are. I wash my clothes even though I'm not the shirt. I don't neglect it. But it's not me either. Clean shirt doesn't mean clean heart and God consciousness. Although a God conscious person keeps their body and their clothing and their hearts clean. Devoid of God consciousness, the act binds the performer and the recipient. Repeated birth and death. That's not the best gift you can give. You can give that which liberates the soul from birth and death, at the same time help the covering of the soul, fine. But it's very easy to have as one's purpose the higher purpose and fall to the lower purpose just because our consciousness is not there yet. So the Bhagavatam has strong emphasis upon, as I've mentioned several times now, being clear what the goal is. The goal is Krishna's satisfaction. So while Krishna's satisfaction is the goal, one can enter into family life, take care of one's dependents in a very conscientious way, and will there be happiness of motherhood and fatherhood, of taking care of children? That's going to be there as long as the soul is embodied. Direct that tendency, repose that tendency at the lotus feet of Krishna. Let Krishna be pleased by this act of caring for dependents in one's family and community and society and nation and world. Repose those propensities on satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. Bhajaniya, Paramapurusha, Sukha Matva Svasukhadvam. So that's the Akama Bhakta. And there's the Moksha Kama. And not just Bhaktas desire Moksha. All types of people may desire Moksha. And if one has that aspiration, very well. Tivra Bhakti. Sakama, like Dhruva Maharaj, Tivra Bhakti. Akama, Tivra Bhakti. Everybody, Tivra Bhakti. So that's the answer, a more firm and comprehensive answer to Maharaj Pariksit's question, what is the duty of the person who is about to die? Tivra bhakti. What about people in general? Tivra bhakti. What about people that have material desire? Well, they can go to various devas, but they really should just go to the Supreme Lord, and they should do that with very strong determination by being udaradi, broad-minded, manishinam, being very thoughtful, and this other term is manashi, ready to detach oneself from anything other than that which will take me to the destination, love for Krishna, and let me take as many persons with me as Krishna permits. Compassion. And of course, you can't program the free will of another living entity who has free will, because their free will is free will. But by loving relationships, one can encourage others, induce others to come on the same path. And others will be inclined if the relationships are loving relationships and not twisting their arm and forcing them. It doesn't work that way anyways. One can't enter into the spiritual world saying, ouch.
Oh, okay, okay.
You twisted my arm. I came along with you. It's voluntary. It's with volition. Conclusion then, the Srimad Bhagavatam is awakening that spirit of voluntarily submitting oneself to the Supreme Lord with broad-minded intelligence and great determination, tivra bhakti, regardless of one's position, as Prabhupada ends, as the unmixed sun ray is very forceful and is therefore called tivra, similarly, unmixed, listen to this phrase, unmixed bhakti yoga, hearing and chanting, etc., may be performed by one and all, regardless of inner motive. Unmixed, regardless of inner motive. That is to say, even if there is some other motive, that other motive will be dissolved by the power of bhakti. It will just dissolve or dissipate, like the sun in contact with mist and fog. It's gone. Because all that sun and mist is the moisture condensed, and by the contact of the sun, it's evaporated again. There's nothing holding us back but our own free will. Krishna's calling us, and we're resisting. We just give up the resistance, and we can be with Krishna at once by this powerful devotional service. Okay, so I'll end with that and see if you have any comments or questions.
Can we experience the power of Krishna consciousness?
Are you experiencing the power of Krishna consciousness? I heard your question.
Yes.
I'm answering with a question.
Yes.
Okay. I'll answer it another way. We would not be able to continue unless we were experiencing the power of Krishna consciousness. There's something that keeps us going. And it's not just wishful thinking. Someday, maybe, I'll go to that nice place. We couldn't continue. There must be something we're experiencing. And it's meant, pratyakshavalam dharmyam susukam kartam avyayam, Krishna indicates in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This message of Bhagavad Gita is meant to be directly experienced. The soul and the soul's relation with Krishna, the most confidential knowledge, is meant to be directly experienced. Pratyaksha. And susukam. Not only sukam, susukam. And avyayam, it doesn't end. It's ever increasing. Yeah, it's meant to be experienced. Someone?
Well, this part I was not clear, Maharaj, that to regardless of inner motive, we have to perform Tivra Bhakti, which is unmixed. Is it that it is an exclusive shelter in Krishna and not placing...
It's just a conviction that that's where I want to go, although I may not be there right now. He was asking the question this morning, we have material desires, how can we engage in undivided devotional service when those material desires are going to distract our attention? So the answer I gave, one of those three options, and one of those options is the Dhruva Maharaj option. You know that the desire that you want to have to attain, it requires Udaradi. I want this desire. To get it, I need to reach Vishnu. So I go to Vishnu. And then that desire becomes the impetus for bhakti. It's mixed, but it's tibra bhakti. It comes out unmixed because that tibra bhakti dissolves the material desire. When he achieved the shelter of Lord Vishnu, his desire was gone. He was apologizing for his initial ill motivation. But guess what? He got the kingdom. Even he didn't have the desire for the kingdom anymore. Should I elaborate some more? No. Who said that one? No. Krishna is not a vending machine. That's automatic. Krishna removes the material desire, and that's not automatic. Does that explain my answer? Krishna is not obliged. We don't have Krishna under contract. I pay you, and you supply me. And I'll take you to jail if you don't. You're for violation of the contract. I put in my money, and you're supposed to supply. It's not automatic. It's not like that. You have vending machines here in India, right? Put in my coins, pull the lever, down comes the product. Krishna is not a vending machine. By his mercy. Not automatically. Yes.
Maharaj, you said...
There's a microphone. Look at that.
Maharaj, during your last seminar, you said about Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was having a lot of desires, material desires and other things.
Big.
But when the conch of the Lord Vishnu touched on his head, all his material desire were vanished.
And so?
So that was the reason also, no?
So what about us? Where's the conch going to come in?
No, means the Supreme Personality of Godhead is touching the...
I got it. And now what's your question?
That was the reason, I think, Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, desire was seen.
What Prabhupada explains yeah, is it's by the touch of the internal potency. By the touch of the internal potency or spiritual potency of Krishna. We have access to that spiritual potency of Krishna also. When we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare is that internal or spiritual potency. In fact, recalling Mother Hara, in the vocative it becomes Hare. We're also in contact with the spiritual potency of Krishna. Keep chanting that mantra. Chant with great sincerity and submission. Because before Dhruva was touched by the conch shell, he was in ecstasy. He was at the bhava stage. He was already beyond material desire. He was in the bhava stage. His body was trembling. His voice was faltering. His hairs were standing on end. Tears were streaming from his eyes uncontrollably. He wanted to speak, but he couldn't. His voice was choked up. So it was spiritual empowerment that enabled him to speak, not just removal of desires, but the contact with the spiritual potency of the Lord is also available to us. And we're not in the bhava stage. Not yet. Most of us, at least. Yes? Over here.
Maharaj, you described that different levels of intelligence, and one level you said that there is discrimination of what is right, what is wrong,
mm-hmm.
But still there is failure to act on it.
Mm-hmm. Too much of that.
And you then, at the same time, you described Manishi,
yes,
as a person, you know, whose intelligence directs, you know, his mind and senses.
That's right. That's correct.
So, what is the difference in these two intelligences?
It's just a stage. We go back to the reading pleasure. Go back to text 35 of chapter 2 and read the purport carefully. It describes the stages of intelligence that bring one to the conclusion of taking shelter of the personality of Godhead. Prior to that is taking shelter of Paramatma. Prior to that is recognizing that Paramatma exists. We're dependent upon Paramatma's intelligence to enlighten our intelligence to be able to act in proper ways, what is good. It's that stage. Without God consciousness, I can choose the mode of goodness. I can't sustain it because the other modes are competing for supremacy. I'll get like a little piece of wood on the ocean. The waves will toss and sometimes up and sometimes down and all around. I can stay fixed if I have shelter in a higher intelligence. And then that's spiritual intelligence. I'm taking shelter in a vastly superior intelligent being. That's my better intelligence to do that. And going up, that function of giving intelligence to the living being to perform their activities is not the sum total of what God is. I described this yesterday evening. The man that goes to the office and takes care of responsible duties of life has his family as well. He's with his children, and the children are climbing on his back and he's rolling on the ground, and they're, you know, playful activities with his family members besides what he does in the office. And that's the personality of Godhead's position, is he has unlimited loving pastimes while he expands himself as the super soul who is giving direction to the living entities. It's called conscience, to know what is right and what is wrong. And some persons are out of touch. They accept what is wrong to be right in the mode of ignorance. So to get fixed, we have to take help from that intelligence. And we get that help from the intelligence of Supersoul by the manifestation of Supersoul in the form of spiritual master. I take shelter of such a spiritual master. Then we can be fixed. Borrowing from Prabhupada's phrase, that's a fixed up devotee. Because their intelligence is fixed up by the assisting spiritual intelligence, a spiritual guide, a spiritual master, a spiritual teacher. One who doesn't have that shelter is anatta. They have no master. And they're chanchala. Sometimes up, sometimes down. Sometimes here, sometimes there. No shelter. And it's very fearful. In the middle of a storm, with no rudder and no oars, in a boat, it's going all over the place. Very fearful. This material world is very, can be very, very, very fearful place. So one has to have good captain, good sails, good rudder, have a good nap. Experienced captain can take you to the other side. How to develop? This is such a broad question. I would say the question is how to develop maturity and gravity in devotional service. Keep coming to these classes, study Srimad Bhagavatam, apply the instructions of our disciplic succession. The question is too broad for the situation that we have here. I've been given very favorable situations for cultivating Krishna consciousness. What hinders me is my poor desire to go back home, back to Godhead. How do I develop that desire to go to Krishna? Well, again, that's a very broad question. You develop desires by associating with those that have the appropriate desires. I'm like just referring to Prabhupada's statements. Prabhupada was asked the question, how does one become sincere? And Prabhupada's answer was, how does one become a drunkard? By associating with drunkards. Prabhupada said, you go to the drinking place, you go to the bar, and spend the whole day, day after day after day after day after day in such a place, you become a drunkard. How does one become scholarly? You go to the university where there are scholars and you associate with the scholars, and through that association one becomes scholarly. How does one become sincere? Find those that are sincere. Associate with those that are sincere. Make close friendships with those that are very sincere. You become sincere. You want to cultivate the desire to go back to Godhead? Find those people that are very clear what the goal is, back home, back to Godhead. And they're very carefully charting their life in such a way that they're sure that they'll go back to Godhead. And they're following prescribed means to do that. That desire will awaken by association. Another partial answer is those things that you can understand that are part of the path of back home, back to Godhead, that really resonate with you, like really excite you, really inspire you. Do those things. This is the principle of one step at a time. And from the position that gives you strength, act from strength. And then those things that where it's not as easy for you to get so absorbed in or so inspired by, you can borrow from that strength. Another answer, which is part of the question that Vedanta Chaitanya asked in class this morning, if we have other desires, how do we deal with those other desires? Situate yourself under the guidance of someone that you have some faith and trust in. And that faith and trust in that they will guide you to that position and very carefully stay fixed under their guidance. Very faithfully stay fixed under their guidance. And the desire to go back to Godhead follows from that. It comes from just like this other question of can we actually experience Krishna's happiness, you just even a little glimmer of that happiness of Krishna experience gives so much light into life, it's very easy to let go of the darkness of material attraction. It's so exciting and so fulfilling. It's so thrilling. It easily carries you further in that direction. And we have so many opportunities to experience that. Capture those moments and cherish the relationships that helped you to come to that realization. Krishna will see that effort that you're making, and like the sparrow trying to dry up the water of the ocean to get the eggs, Garuda will come and order those ocean to give the eggs back. We'll get greater powers than we have to assist us on the path of devotion. Something else? Okay. Yes?
Thank you, Samana.
There you go.
When we get some material desire in the heart.
Okay.
I mean, suddenly.
It's not suddenly, it's all the time.
So at that moment, out of three options you have given, should we act like Brahma, or like utilizing the desire to...
I recommend that we follow the path that Rupa Goswami has given. That's the safe path. I'll read how Prabhupada describes it. No, I can't see it immediately, but the way he describes it is we cultivate diminishing those desires. Not some desire appears in the heart. Recognize what it is. It's passing phantasmagoria. It's not who you really are. It's not in your real self-interest. It's a distraction from your real self-interest. Withdraw consciousness from that and place consciousness in Krishna. So, for example, that's just an internal exercise. Supposing there's a really strong attack of something. Take a bead bag and chant. And while you're taking your bead bag and chanting, the mind is still, withdraw the mind. Place it upon Krishna. And don't act. Tongue statiksha svabharata. This is the preliminary instruction. It's not like, you know, graduate school. It's just elementary school. You tolerate that duality, the push and the pull, the attraction and repulsion, happiness and distress, heat and cold, pleasure and pain, attraction and repulsion. You just tatikshava, you tolerate it. Withdraw consciousness from the temporary, invest consciousness in Krishna, specifically through the holy name. And if you have, particularly during the there's the battle and there's the lull between battles. When the lull between battles, there's still war going on, just the enemy isn't immediately attacking. Prabhupada said that taking up spiritual life seriously is tantamount to declaring war upon Maya. When you declare war, you better be ready for a fight. Maya isn't just going to say, okay, you win. So be ready. So when the attack is not happening, you're very seriously practicing. And when the attack comes, you're ready because you're practiced to take shelter of the holy name. Take shelter of scriptural instructions. You'll find. Just open up Bhagavad Gita at random, any page, and begin reading, and you'll find Krishna speaking to you. right on the point. Do you have that experience before? Many, many, many devotees find. I mean, it's systematic study is also nice, but you just, you know, when you're under attack, just open up the book and any page, and you'll find instruction relevant to the situation. If you read carefully, take shelter of Krishna, invest consciousness in Krishna, and withdraw consciousness from the temporary. Anya Abhilas Shunyam. Anukoyena Krishna Anushilana. That's what you should do. Anuko means accepting. Krishna Anushilana. Shilana means, Shila means behavior or conduct. Anu Shilana means following the conduct or activities that are pleasing to Krishna. So you're just practicing. I'm under attack and it's like consuming my consciousness, and I'm going to practice taking shelter of Krishna. Cultivate. Prabhupada uses this word Anu Shilana as cultivating. I'm not there. I'm cultivating that which is pleasing to Krishna. Krishna will see that effort and he'll give you strength. That's protection. Take shelter of Krishna, he'll give you protection every time. And that's sublime. That's relationship with Krishna realization. Krishna's shelter is there at all times. We're just lazy, complacent, misguided, always disturbed, not taking shelter. Krishna's shelter is always available. Last question. How to develop faith in our spiritual mentors who link us to our spiritual master, who links us to Krishna. This is one of those broad questions again. How do you develop a relationship with another person? Supposing this is a spiritual mentor person, but supposing it's any person, how do you develop a relationship with those persons? In Nectar Devotion, Rupa Goswami gives us a very nice formula. What's the formula? Tadati Pratigranati Guyam Akyati Prichtati Bhunte Bojayate Chaiva. So there are six categories of loving exchanges, and you take them up. Offer something and receive something. Offer prasad, receive prasad. Disclose your mind in confidence and hearing confidentially, confidential instructions. And then apply those things. You can find someone who is in the category of someone who you can look up to as a qualified person to guide you in spiritual life. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadikshanti te jnanam jnanina tattvadarshana. Find someone who's a tattvadarshi, and then these three things. And it applies to a spiritual mentor who helps one become connected to spiritual master, who helps one become connected to Krishna. It equally applies. Pranipat, Prashna, and Seva. And so you cultivate those three things. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki. Right.